And what I'm going to do now is really jump from the Wisconsin state level to talk about work that we've been involved with. And I'll tell you about who we are in a second, and thinking about what does it take to actually create a national resource that then you can apply in similar ways and use query tools that you've heard about before. So I'm Paul Wallace. I'm a doc. I'm an ecologist in a past life and a health services researcher, and spent a lot of time in quality management type endeavors. Was with Kaiser Permanente for a long time, and for the last major part of the last year, I've been with the Lewin Group. The Lewin Group is an Optum Insight company. You may know Optum Insight by its past life as Ingenix. Optum Insight is part of the United Universe. Disclosure-wise, I do work for an Optum Insight company, and part of what we're going to talk about is work that we've been doing both as Lewin and Optum Insight. And you'll see that we have a variety of other partners. So this is going to be a discussion about an initiative that's part of the comparative effectiveness funding that came out of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or ERA. You've heard some about this earlier. And one of the objectives associated with ERA was to build and operate a multi-payer claims database to support CER, and to build on a foundation of both public and private payer claims data. So, as we talked about in Wisconsin, one of the dilemmas, if you really want to understand the health of a population, is to have data that reflects the care of a whole population, and to be able to get past the boundaries and silos related to payers. And so creating multi-payer databases is one approach to doing that. These are complex projects, and it has taken place in a variety of phases with ERA funding under the leadership of ASPE and CMS. There was the first phase, which was the strategic and technical design. Avalier was involved, along with Microsoft, Thomson Reuters, and Pexel. The actual creation of the database is the phase that we've been involved with, work that started at the beginning of this year and proceeds still. So again, I think we've talked a little bit about the opportunity, but as we think about these issues of population health, and particularly focused on comparative effectiveness research, how to give people advice about what works at an individual level that's personalized for their situation and their particular care needs and their preferences, we have to actually, the paradox is that in order to focus more personally, we really need to resort to larger and larger data resources. Good news is that there are a variety of advances in the technology that allow us to move this forward. The paradox, as we've also alluded to before, is that the advances in technology mean that in many ways the rate limiting steps tend to be social and organizational, about thinking about how, what are the appropriate boundaries for sharing data, what are the appropriate uses of data. But the technology itself is also fairly challenging. As I think many of you are aware because you're here in the room, there's a lot of work going on right now on how to create aggregated and integrated data resources, and many of these are listed here. The good news to me is that there's a lot of parallel processing of the experience, both understanding what are the range of technical solutions and also a lot of understanding about how do we actually engage people, do this safely, and do this appropriately. And one of these efforts is the multi-payer claims database, or MPCD. In a sense, it is new territory because, as we'll talk about, it's a hybrid in many ways. It's to engage a broad group of participants, some of whom may want to have their data actually hosted in mass, others of whom may want to actually hold on to their data and only respond to clearly identified queries. And the goal is to create a capability that would be broadly engaging for really all of the different constructs that people may use around their data. And the initial funding and the initial application, like we talked about, is for comparative effectiveness research. The work is being facilitated by ASPE and also by CMS. We're involved along with our Optum Insight colleagues, along with a whole variety of other colleagues who are listed here. We have academic partners at the University of Washington, and you'll also see that Academy Health, the Health Services Research Organization, has been helping to facilitate an oversight and governance group. The goal is to develop a robust data infrastructure that can look longitudinally at claims data, but also an implicit goal is to think about how this creates understanding about both creating the technical and social infrastructure to build in other kinds of data. The data asset is a representative sample of all payers. The goal is to have it be representative of care nationally. The initial data will be administrative data from claim systems, like we talked about. There's data from Optum Insight, formerly Ingenix, the normative health information database, tens of millions of people, combined with data from the CMS chronic conditions warehouse. And then, as we'll talk about, there's also the pursuit of additional data partners to bring in further sources of data. This is a timeline. The intent is not to have this be a vision test. It's just to recognize that, as all of you are aware, these are really complex projects that have a lot of interdependencies. There are fortunately people who are really good at thinking through the interdependencies and how to manage these. They also reflected in different colors. There are times when one has to think about how to actually evolve the plans. But where we are right now is at the point where we're able to have an infrastructure in which it can actually accept data from a variety of public and private sources. And we're working forward on how to both validate and test that this data can be brought together in a way that actually becomes analyzable. We'll also, as you'll see, have downstream opportunities to demonstrate and test the value of this. And then also one of the critical issues thinking forward is how do these resources become sustainable? What are the needs for actually supporting them as long-going enterprises, particularly when their initial creation is supported by grants and project monies? So I don't pretend to have solutions to that. That's part of the work that's going to go forward. But I mentioned before that there are some aspects of the technical design of this that I think are innovative. It is based on a hybrid approach, recognizing that people are coming from different places when they think about their willingness and their capabilities for sharing data. Again, there are some folks who, frankly, would just as soon share the data and allow it to be hosted in its native state, where there are other folks who feel that the best approach to data stewardship from their perspective is to only respond to very specific identified queries. And the goal here is to create an environment where both of those can be done so as to not bias the data by having data from one perspective or the other perspective. Clearly, one has to have robust privacy and use constraints, and the nuances of how people share data mean that those privacy and use constraints also need to be highly nuanced. Negotiations to actually achieve the partnerships is complex, and the cost of building inflexibility is that it's pretty complex and pretty challenging to pull this off. There is, as I mentioned before, a very clear emphasis on privacy and security controls. With compliance in a whole variety of different arenas. It's also been a learning laboratory for thinking about what does that really mean at the macro organization level and in smaller organizations. So there's a lot of learning going on and thinking about how do we create these systems so that they're appropriate use but still protect confidentiality of clinicians and of patients. So here's the inevitable data schema. And the way we'll walk through this, if you look at the far left-hand side as you look, it recognizes that some folks will want to hold on to their data in their local environment and only make available small subsets of the data relative to specific queries. So those would be distributed data contributors who participate in the network by responding, for instance, to a request for a particular subset of data. And then there also is another variable here, that the data that they would provide could be aggregated up to a population level, or it might be granular down to the individual level. So we're looking at two different phenomena. One is about whether people hold on to their data and only make it available for specific requests. And then there's also the second piece, which is the form in which they share data, whether it's aggregated data to reflect a portion of a population or whether it's very granular data down to the level of a patient or perhaps even down to the level of an episode. And as you can imagine, people have a variety of different needs for how that data is shared. And the far right-hand side shows an additional aspect of the MPCD where there are some sources of data which can be hosted with the data available all the way down to a very granular level. An example of that would be the Ingenix data. And then as a query is created from the user community at the very bottom, there are a variety of ways that this could then be executed. One would be from with a specific query that is created to the distributed data contributors, they would make available data in a format that meets, again, their needs and their requirements. For the hosted data contributors, there is a hosted data warehouse that combines that data that then can also be pursued to obtain data. All of that can be combined into a data abstract. A particular technology called the Virtual Hippocratic Database is used to be sure that privacy is protected, and then that data can be made available in a variety of different forms, which are noted at the bottom. There's the capability to create de-identified public content, to produce particular CER analytic files that may be standardized, to think about other standard analytic files, and also to create quite specific, unique, customized requests. So a lot of moving parts, a lot of need to be very attentive to the requirements of the data suppliers, and frankly, a lot of progress in understanding how to make these pieces all come together. The other part about this, then, is how would you actually get at the data? So the design also includes a web-based interface to register users and process requests, again, with rigorous privacy and security screening and control. The data access has three conceptual levels. The first would be for hosted aggregated data for doing CER studies and leveraging the public usage files that I mentioned before. Second would be to have some standard analytic files with the hypothesis that this may actually support a fair amount of comparative effectiveness research. This may actually just reflect a modest sample of the overall data universe, but that also will be somewhat user defined. And there are some critical learnings going forward about that from CES's previous project, thinking about public use files and de-identification that are being incorporated into this. The final part is about custom data extracts, so thinking about highly specified or highly customized studies and how those can actually be brought forward, and thinking about what are the needs for extra controls to be sure that data use is appropriate, both from the standpoint of the MPCD, but also from the standpoint of the folks who make the data available. There is the opportunity going forward to think about how this data resource can be used for other things, to be thinking about how episode grouping can then be superimposed, to think about how risk adjustment can be used, potentially to think about how one could do regressions and other kinds of analysis, and how this could be applied to quality metrics. But so you can see, rounding up the cattle is a fairly significant exercise, and getting it available for use is a complex task. Again, the primary data at the current point includes the Optum Insight data asset, NHI, which is geographically and demographically distributed commercial claims. It also includes the chronic condition warehouse from CMS that includes Medicare and Medicaid data. And then the design and specifications call for recruitment of a couple additional data partners, and a lot of discussions have gone on with a range of particularly state-based all payer claims databases, and those are still discussions and negotiations that are underway. There is the potential for incorporating other sources of data, such as other commercial claims. Beyond phase one, obviously once one creates proof of concept and demonstrates that one can preserve both the technology and the social contracts, there's the opportunity to think about how this could actually incorporate a whole range of additional data, ranging from EMRs to data that reflects personal preference. But that's way out of scope. Hopefully it's something that will be addressed before our children's children. But I think that it's obviously where this will be moving over time as the capabilities are demonstrated. So when one thinks about who are the partners to incorporate into a multi-payer claims database, I think that there are some characteristics that are desirable. First of all, is they got to have data, thinking about the quantity and coverage of data, thinking about what's the data cost. You know, in a sense, EMR data is very attractive over time, as are claims, because they're generated as a byproduct of care. data that has to be generated through surveys and things like that may have a very high cost per member. Quality and format of the data, the ability to actually have it fit and be incorporated into the larger format, how available it is, restrictions on use, whether it overlaps with other partners, and then also particularly thinking about diversity of content. So diversity has a lot of meanings here, but thinking about different kinds of data sources, but also ensuring that populations at risk and populations of need are fully reflected in the data set. There is the need to ensure that we meet a whole range of different constituencies. Clearly, this is being funded with public monies, so it's important to ensure that appropriate stewardship and protection are used. We work very closely with a range of partners in HHS, and the HHS Leadership Council is critical to this. We also have sought to involve others in thinking about how we can reflect the credibility and utility of this. So we have a governance board that I'll talk about in a second. We also have academic partners for further use. The governance board, we think, is important for both communicating the opportunity, but also having dialogue about appropriate use and any concerns. This is Academy Health is our partner in actually facilitating this, and the members of that are shown here. It's really designed to engage a range of stakeholders, both those who would contribute data, those who would use data, and to communicate the due diligence that's gone into this process. There, as I mentioned before, is a need to think down the road. These things are not self-perpetuating. They're a challenge. They are so thinking about what is, you know, for lack of a better term, the business model that allows these things to go forward is a critical piece, but it's also thinking over time about what's going to need to be accrued into the data in order to have it be a sustainable business model is a critical piece. There will be plans for an initial release this summer. The actual content of that is still somewhat under discussion, but the goal is going to be to both test and demonstrate these various aspects of MPCD that I've talked about, the ability to match members, to bring together this volume of government and private data, to be able to make the data available for CER research. There also are some other considerations which may or may not be pursued. Some of this may be thinking about to what extent do we, what are the pluses and limitations of different ways of aggregating data. So how much can you accomplish if the data that you get only reflects the whole population as opposed to a granular level? And what are the implications? How can this data be used for a variety of different analyses? And one of the other thoughts that's beginning to evolve is you think about as an investigator when you're beginning to do a study and planning, there's a fair amount of exploration in a database to know about what can you do and how can you use it, particularly when you're looking across settings. And would there be value for creating a really aggressively de-identified, perturbed database that's still reflective of the environment to allow people to create better queries? So those are all considerations that are in play of thinking about how this asset might have greater use. So final slide is really just a summary slide that, you know, this has created a very high level of interest in participation and a very high sensitization about the risks of participation and the desirability of participation, I guess is how I would summarize it. I think it's been a remarkable learning environment for really understanding all the nuances about data sharing, but also all the concerns about data sharing. And I would do a disservice if I didn't once again mention that privacy and security are at the forefront of everybody's thinking in this. Thinking about what are the trade-offs between data de-identification and the ability to actually create the knowledge we need. And finally, how do we create security? A lot of thinking about whether there are new and innovative ways to actually share data with data, you know, a data enclave, if you will. I think people are familiar with having to go into secure sites to access data. Are there other ways to achieve that kind of protection if indeed having granular individual level data has a role for going forward? So those are all things that are still under discussion and being considered. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Dr. Wallace, for an excellent presentation and a yeoman's job in trying to summarize Julie's presentation as well. When I started, I didn't talk about myself in terms of my role in this. So I am the managing director of Strategic Health Resources, which is a boutique healthcare strategy firm in Arlington, Virginia. And I also teach as an adjunct faculty at Carnegie Mellon and the Heinz College in Medical Management and Health Policy. So what I'd like to do, I know people want to go to their next session, but what I'd like to do is to open it up for some discussion and try to see some commonalities or common ground among the presentations. I did an overview of comparative effectiveness, and Dr. Wallace and Tammy did a great job in looking at some of the specifics. So if you want to ask a question, identify yourself and let us know in terms of what your question is. But I want to start off by posing a question to Dr. Wallace. You described this system that you've developed to me as the funding from the Affordable from ARRA, and looking sort of further ahead to the Affordable Care Act and the implications. Where do you see comparative effectiveness, and then within a subset of it, the role of healthcare technology in that?
Well, I guess the effectiveness to me of CER is having spent the last 20 years in evidence-based medicine and learning all of the pitfalls of evidence-based medicine. One of the transitions that happens with CER is a very disciplined recognition that it needs to be related to individuals and how individuals make decisions. And the reality is that most of the knowledge base that's been developed up till now was very good at informing the care of the average patient, seeing the average physician with average healthcare benefits in the average community. And that person, I don't know where that person lives, maybe in Wisconsin, but they, most of us have some aspect of uniqueness that requires the ability to relate our situation to that base case. But historically, we've just sort of relied on clinicians to be able to make the leap intuitively. And one of the opportunities with comparative effectiveness research is to actually support clinicians and patients in being able to make that leap empirically. And I think that the tension that's evolving within PCORI around what the hell do we mean by patient-centered outcomes research captures that challenge of wanting to have, if you will, sort of the patients like me paradigm, rather than trying to force me to be like the mean of the distribution in the randomized control trial. How about the last 3,000 people closest to me who received care in Maryland or Northern Virginia? What happened to them in this healthcare system so that I can make better health decisions? And so I think that part of the recognition, though, is that if we want to get to that level of empiricism, we have to also have some fairly substantial thinking about how we organize data and how we analyze data. And it's not to demean the value of evidence-based medicine and the rigor of all the work that's gone in, but it's to also recognize that now, because first of all, with EMRs and a variety of other things, data, the cost of data is becoming negligible, frankly. Data itself is becoming almost a commodity. The challenge is how you actually use data and translate it into information, where if you think about doing randomized control trials, data was extraordinarily expensive because it always had a human being interposed to create data. So we've gone from this sort of world of data management being almost a hunter-gatherer activity, where researchers and data analysts were very good at isolating and preserving and saving data and preparing it for the feast, where now data is really a commodity that looks much more like farming. And the reflexes and resources that we have to use, I think, will have every bit as profound a transition as what happened with those kinds of societal transitions. So I think where CER is it's sort of the incentive and the capture of all of that, and it's maybe putting a little burden on CER to say that it's actually the thing that will get us there, but yet part of the burden is actually offloaded a little bit by the fact that it also carries an awful lot of resource with it, and it's aggregating a lot of people and a lot of conversation and thinking about how we can solve some of these problems. Long-winded answer, but I think it's we're just at a really substantial inflection point that allows us to get beyond just trying to force people into population descriptions and create highly personalized descriptions.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm John Linsko from your CPI. I want to follow up on the burden of comparative effectiveness. I think there is an expectation of the role comparative effectiveness research will play, and it's a heavy burden in terms of health reform and activities going forward. And I'm having trouble seeing the IT path right now for that. And to be specific, it's around a first an assumption, and if this is broad brush, I will guarantee you, but you alluded to yourself, that claims data alone are not sufficient to carry out the comparative effectiveness vision, and that we need clinical data or EHR data to actually to fully shoulder the expectation for comparative effectiveness research. Now, you can question that premise, but just building on it, I don't see the path forward for where clinical data are brought together in a place where that type of research, where they are obviously in identified forms for longitudinal care, but are brought together in a way that that research can be done. And I guess the competing approaches to that would be either in an ACO or outside of an ACO at a state or the federal level. And from everything that has just been described here, the state or federal level would either get those clinical data by virtue of more clinical data being associated with the claims process, which I'm not sure is going to happen, or some other way outside of the claims process through quality of reporting or some other form for getting those data. So it's a long question, but basically I'm not seeing, and this is not pointed at this panel, this is excellent presentations, I'm not seeing the path forward to the comparative effectiveness vision, assuming that it's dependent on bringing together clinical data in a way to do that kind of more detailed observational work that I think many people suggest is necessary. And can you comment on that?
Let me take a stab at that. I mean, I think there's two parts to that question. One is the issue of EMR data, and can EMR satisfy the limitations of claims data? And I'll tell you that we have a database now where we've linked GE's EMR database to our claims database. And as with any database, you start using it, you're like, hey, it doesn't have this, it doesn't have that. So we have the weight and height. We don't have it at every visit. EMR is not the panacea that it's sort of been sold to be. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I think the issue is now we have a lot of data. We need to figure out what are the appropriate questions for the appropriate database. There are a lot of questions that you do not want to answer with observational data, that people think that, now I can answer all these questions that I could answer with randomized trials with observational data, and I can do it on a more diverse, heterogeneous population so I can figure out how this drug is going to work in patients who are not typically included in randomized trials. And I've come to the conclusion that we're a long way from being able to do that. As much as I'd like to say, being an observational data person, that I can replicate a randomized trial with observational data, I really don't think we're at that point where we can do it. And even if we link the EMR on and have better measures of severity, I'm not sure we're at that point. And I think that's a huge methodological question that we need to get an answer to if we're really going to move forward the field and take advantage of observational data. But at this point, I think the FDA is nowhere near approving drugs based on anything other than a randomized clinical trial. But that's not to say there aren't important questions that you can't answer with observational data. I mean, the huge problems with the healthcare system are not that we don't know if drug A is better than drug B. It's that when patients get discharged, no one follows them up. It's that when patients get a medication for depression, no one finds out if it's working. No one looks at the side effects. I mean, there's all these system issues going on that I think this observational data can be very good at answering and helping us understand, where the problems lie. So that's kind of where I'm evolving in terms of my thinking about richer data. It's not just a matter of richer data. Richer data combined with figuring out how do we exploit it to answer the most appropriate questions.
So
So what I think about it, too, is that I think it's loosening up our reflexes about how we solve problems. I don't know how many people remember the old Saturday Night Live skit with Belushi and the hamburger place where
cheeseburger.
You got a hamburger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, in reality, if you think about health services research, our reflex to any problem has always been do a trial. And I think that what's happening is we're beginning to realize that we can broaden the menu. And so, I mean, I think that in terms of doing trials, there's a lot of movement in thinking about what are practical clinical trials, and how do we actually, what are Bayesian approaches that allow us to evolve trial design in the midst of the trial. And there's a complementary piece that says, how do we think about observational learning in a different way? So there's sort of the historical way of doing observational research, which is kind of parachuting behind the enemy lines to try and figure out what the hell's going on in a totally chaotic environment. And of course you can't learn very much. But being able to think about prospective designs and data capture that organize data going forward so that then you can later make observations, registries, creates new ways of actually learning. So I think that, to me, the biggest advantage of CER is it's kind of loosened up the discussion, and it's at least on the margin created some energy and exploration about how can we answer questions using alternative data sources. Maybe the final comment I make is that I think it's also to realize that, maybe things like multi-payer data may be really helpful for us doing a couple of things. One would be looking at population-based safety issues. So maybe once a drug is out there, how do we actually understand safety? So the Sentinel approach, I think, is a very important thing. It may also be important for us in thinking about, when a drug has been tested in a trial and then is out in the general population, what are the issues that when you begin to extend the use of the drug with patients with comorbidity, patients who maybe are in different ethnic, racial groups that were included in the original trial, when you begin to cross gender, and not so much for truth-telling, but at least for hypothesis generation, so that succeeding trials can be more fully informed. So I mean, I'm sort of a glass-half-full guy rather than a glass-half-empty guy, but I think at least we got a glass.
I'm going to get to your question, but sort of a two-part response to, I think it was an excellent question. If you look at the experience from the UK, with which comparative they've been doing comparative effectiveness from the Blair government, basically the NICE, National Institute of Clinical Excellence, the challenge that you have, which Tammy did an excellent job of sort of addressing it, is if you were to look at a wide variety of interventions. So let's say you're looking at nutrition, lifestyle interventions, complementary medical practice. Not just drug A versus drug B, which we need to understand. And we have a very diverse country, most diverse. It's always interesting when people draw lessons from Europe or other countries, but we have the most diverse population on the planet. And it's very difficult to draw from the Dutch experience, okay? It's a tiny little country. We have a big population, rapidly growing, lots of different types of genetic component. So I think it's really, I think the process that ARA and the Affordable Care Act, especially with PCORI, my question to PCORI is, this is nice that they created this framework, but really, how are you going to, especially from a disparities perspective, how are you really going to address significant differences that we have? And clearly, from what Dr. Wall said, we don't have a lot of data for diverse populations when it comes to treatment patterns. So just for hypertension alone, diabetes. So I think that we can draw lessons from other places, but we really need to figure out states that are doing a good job, like Wisconsin, like Minnesota, and try to bring those up on a national level. Go ahead.
But do we have the manpower resources and the interoperability capability and the infrastructure to support many of these efforts, and especially on the national level? I mean, it's great to think of all the the different ways we could use the data, but are we actually going to be able to get the data? Because you had in your presentation at least four different data providers
mm-hmm.
who use dissimilar systems.
Mm-hmm.
Sending information to a third-party aggregator, which I'm going to assume has its own proprietary language and system. So, do we, you know, is that, I understand that we've got these demonstration projects, but do we have the manpower to do this? Do we have the infrastructure to do this?
Well, I'll take a, I mean, the goal, again, in anything when you look at federal programs, you have to go back to the statute and the limitations that the law gives you. So it's not, I think the initial funding was to address that need for infrastructure, but it can't just be at the national level. You have to have examples from the states, from local communities, and no, I would say that we don't. And the other thing is we don't know enough. I mean, if you look at current medical practice, we don't really know a lot about what happens. We know something, and it's gotten a lot better, but we clearly don't have true comparative data across, even by drug class or by therapeutic class, for specific subgroup populations. We just don't have that information. But I think this is it's a down payment towards what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to realize we're really at an early time in this. The flip side of that is it's like a sixth of the economy that's basically being run off of the intuition of smart people. I mean, how crazy is that? That's my point, though. I mean, I think that it's just, in my mind, it's inevitable that there will be sense-making that will occur, and mm-hmm. I think that to me, the shortest path to sense-making is to actually base it on tangible empiric experience. Now, whether it will be, you know, things like this, or whether it will be more local, or whether, you know, I think that's what we're going to learn over the next 5 to 10 years, but I think it's just inevitable that we're going to move from worrying about how we manage data to worrying about how we manage information and knowledge. We consume a remarkable amount of information or a remarkable amount of resources just running around with not managing the data.
Question, sir.
Doug Conrad from the University of Washington in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions that I'm particularly interested in as an economist is pricing transparency and price variation. Claims data, it seems to me, particularly if it's multi-payer, is well positioned to address that through allowed payments, for example, the actual transaction price. The minute you look at that variation across providers, across areas, it then raises the CER question about what's being done for that price. And what unit is the price? Is it a fee-for-service price? Is it an episode bundle? Whatever. Anyway, we're trying to explore that in Seattle using data from the multiple payers. We can assemble it. There's so much sensitivity about releasing the dollar. 15 years ago when I did these studies in Seattle and in Washington and the Northwest, you'd get allowed payments kind of easily. Question. If you de-identify it in terms of the actual payer and the actual patient, but you know that claim one, observation one, service one is uniquely different than claim two, payer two, et cetera, in other words, you know it's a different payer, you know it's a different patient, and you can link those, but you don't know the name. Can we start to use these multi-payer databases in sufficiently large cells to look at that question of pricing transparency? So far, I haven't been able to lick that bone, but a lot of the data that comes out seems to say price is a big part of the spend problem, you know, roughly half of it. So in addition to looking at what's effective, a very important clinical question, it should be nice if we could pull constant, ceteris paribus, if you will, some of the quality issues and look at price. And actual price, not charge, not list, but the actual one in transaction. Is there a prospect of doing that?
We are actually, Thomson Reuters has developed a tool in which certain customers can go in and look at know, what the price is for different providers in your area if you're going out and getting a knee replacement. You know, these are the prices. But if you saw the recent Wall Street Journal article a couple of days ago, you'll note that that's very controversial, that a lot of health plans are not happy about, and maybe a lot of providers aren't happy about that. So it is kind of interesting, you know, what other field, you know, is price, you know, top secret?
Exactly.
You know?
It's a bilateral oligopoly. We've really got in most markets, including ours.
Yeah.
You know, the two major commercial payers account for about 40% of the business. And, you know, my economic training in Chicago said, don't just look at structure. But, hey, it's a pretty big hint. And we know that the variation is about 2.5-fold from low to high for a given HCPCS code. But we kind of can't get at that in any granular basis. Seems like there ought to be a public groundswell to say, come on, we're not going to name you, but we're going to look at this market and see how much variation there is. And then pretty soon, I've written an op-ed in our local paper in Seattle saying, make this transparent. Give yourself a year or two to get out from under the current contracts. To make a public announcement that people are going to start being able to look at what the price is for a given provider and a given plan and a given service.
I think how can we not agree with that? Except it's sort of like, well, why won't that happen? Sort of the left brain says yes, and the right brain says, oh no, here we go. But you know, I mean, it's also to think about what is going to be the backlash that's going to make that more difficult. So I mean, they're actually. So I expect the next decade we're going to see a lot of antitrust actions around use of data that will be a barrier to go through. And the challenge is going to be this balance point between preserving the status quo. It is a sixth of the economy after all, versus actually transitioning to a new way of thinking about that. It's going to be pretty messy. I think it's not a given, but I think that. I think it's basically just trying to keep testing and making the case.
Yeah, maybe in local markets is the place to do it. You show that
probably.
You can do it in Seattle, you can do it in Milwaukee, you can do it in Chicago, then maybe the idea that you can use Altair databases to do it around the country is not too long after.
One reminder, though, is that the dominant payer in any community is a national public payer. So, and to remember that any practice-based change that you want to make probably has to involve fundamental systems in that practice, a fair amount of which are devoted to taking care of publicly funded patients who will have policy made on a national basis. So that's where that tension is going to, I think, be unavoidable, but it's important to bring it forward.
Well, I mean, I can understand your premise, but politically, the way that comparative effectiveness got through was the fact that it was not linked to what you're talking about. And there were a number of people in present Congress and both the House and the Senate who were very critical of this. So I think it's a very thorny issue from a congressional perspective in terms of what you're asking. But yes, I think price transparency from a consumer perspective is really needed. So, well, thank you all for coming. This has been a great discussion. And we'll continue this at some later point.